Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. It's Saturday night, and, you know, there's a question in the Zoom party Q&A about Agnes Moorehead. And, you know, I only knew a brief little bit off the top of my head about her children and such, and so I decided, you know, I'll do a little quick basement blast or something a little bit longer, not about just Agnes, but the whole show, Bewitched, because I did have that blind about Robert Montgomery, Mr. Bulge, whose daughter played on Bewitched. That Robert Montgomery cracks me up. And, you know, one of the things that with Bewitched, and I haven't watched a rerun in a long, long time, but I remember when they made that, the movie with Will Ferrell and Nicole Kidman, and I said, this is nothing like the show at all, and just kind of destroyed the, you know, this quirky kind of, I guess it was on, you know, in the mid-60s to early 70s, just the atmosphere about it. I mean, it was a sitcom, and it was on ABC for 8 years. I didn't, you know, even realize until I started looking that it was on so early. I mean, September 1964 to March 1972. And if you've never seen it, you know, I encourage you to find some episodes and watch them. And it's just, you know, it's fun. It's quirky. I encourage you also to stay away from the film. But you had this story of a modern witch trying to blend into society as a housewife while refraining from using her magic skills to carry out everyday tasks. And the first year it was on, it was the number one show on ABC, and the second biggest show on any of the three networks, because back then you didn't really have a lot of choices. But number one, of course, you know, back then was Bonanza, which I don't think that I've ever actually seen a whole episode of Bonanza. But you had Elizabeth Montgomery, and she played the role of Samantha Stevens. And as I said before, Elizabeth Montgomery's father was the famous actor Robert Montgomery, and she had started out on her father's program, Robert Montgomery Presents, before kind of breaking off into bigger acting roles. And her father was a big deal. I mean, a big deal. And one of the craziest jobs that he had was he took an unpaid position as a consultant to President Eisenhower, advising him on how to look his best in television appearances. And he even had an office at the White House. You know, this is when, you know, TV and politicians first started kind of hanging out together, you know, and then in 1960, you had the debate between Nixon and Kennedy, and that was the first televised presidential debate. And a lot of people say that one of the reasons that Kennedy beat Nixon, because Nixon was much more well-known, was that Nixon looked awful on television, and John F. Kennedy looked great. And so people were like, "Ooh, do we really want this guy to be president?" Because you really hadn't seen this kind of interaction on television. So Eisenhower was a little bit ahead of his, you know, time in getting Robert Montgomery to do that. So during the run of the show, you know, Elizabeth won audiences over playing the nose-twitching witch. That's how she did it. She would move her nose, and that's how she cast a spell. But she wasn't the creator's first pick for the role. A woman named Tammy Grimes was the first choice. Now, with a lot of these things where you say, "Oh, you know, I was up for something and I turned it down," and you imagine to yourself, "Well, I can't see that other person in the role because this person was so perfect for her." And I think that's how a lot of people feel about Elizabeth Montgomery. You can't imagine if they had selected anyone but her. She got 5 Emmy nods for Bewitched. And, you know, in between takes on the set, she liked to doodle and draw. And she had been married twice before marrying the Bewitched producer, Bill Asher, in 1963. And they had 3 children before divorcing in 1973. And like all things Hollywood, the marriage ended because she cheated on Asher with this director named Richard Michaels, who was also married at the time. And then after that affair fizzled out, she married Robert Foxworth, who she remained with until her death. Now, at least 2 of her pregnancies were scripted into the series, which was, you know, a little bit more unusual back then. And she was even granted authority to name her character daughter Samantha. She had this thing, you know, because Bewitched was very kind of innocent. So she wanted to be something completely different when she left the show. And she, you know, she started releasing sexier photos, and she had this successful film and documentary career. She was cast in The Legend of Lizzie Borden and Cover Up Behind the Iran-Contra Affair, A Case of Rape, The Panama Deception, and one time she even co-starred opposite O.J. Simpson in A Killing Affair. That's kind of foreshadowing right there. She also co-starred opposite Kirk Douglas and Amos. So, you know, another not nice person. Lucky her. Her husband on screen was a mortal, Darren Stevens, and it was for, you know, he was first played by actor Dick York, who was later replaced by Dick Sargent, and who, I don't know which comedian first said this, but whoever it was, it has stuck with me for the many, many years since I heard this joke. Something to the effect of, you just can't change Dick's midstream like that. But it is interesting that they went from Dick York to Dick Sargent. So props to whatever comedian came up with that, because that line has stuck with me forever. Now, how that came to be where Dick Sargent replaced Dick York was that Dick York had this debilitating back injury that had previously sidelined his acting career. And Bewitched, you know, the producers wanted to work with him, and they offered to accommodate him if he would oblige. The crew even built a slanted wall so that he could lay against it in between takes to decrease the amount of strain on his back. But by the third season of filming, he had become so reliant on pain pills that it affected his ability to act. So, you know, he started showing up late to set. And when he did show up, he was completely out of it. And oftentimes he didn't show up at all. So the cast and the crew, they never knew what to expect from him. So they actually wrote two scripts for each episode. Imagine that. One that included him and one that didn't, just in case he failed to show up. Because they couldn't afford for him to hold up production. You know, it's expensive to have cast and crew waiting around. And, you know, this was a set where they had some money to play with, but they didn't go crazy. Supporting actors and actresses normally wore clothes and accessories from their own closet, which leads to this, and you know, the crazy quirkiness of the show. And when you see Agnes Moorehead coming out in some of the clothes that she wore, and you go, you know, I bet she has that in her own closet. During the fifth season, York had an episode on set where he, you know, passed out and had to be transported to the hospital by ambulance. And the production decided he was just too much of a liability, and for the sake of the entire cast and crew, they would just replace him. And after breaking the news to him, they did replace him with Dick Sargent, a guy who, you know, looked remarkably similar to Dick York. I mean, just enough, which is what Elizabeth Montgomery requested. And, you know, the entire time that Dick York was struggling with addiction and pain, Agnes Moorehead was there and, you know, listened to him and comfort him, kind of like a sponsor almost. And she was really kind to him. And he did eventually clean himself up and get back to acting, you know, which is always a good thing. And Dick Sargent, Darren number two, was the son of an actress and business manager, Elmer Cox, who kind of worked with the who's who of Hollywood. You know, people like Douglas Fairbanks and Eric von Stroheim. And Sargent took his stage name because he probably didn't want to be called Dick Cox. And Dad Elmer, who decided that, hey, you know, the greatest name for a guy with the last name of Cox should be Dick. Dick Cox. So, yes, he changed his last name to Sargent. And it was from a Saturday Evening Post illustrator of the same name. And before Bewitched even filmed their first episode, Sargent was wanted for the original role of Darren. But he turned it down because he was working on another project. I mean, if they had started with him, you know, imagine the headaches they could have dodged with York. But at the same time, maybe the chemistry wouldn't have been there. Maybe the show wouldn't have been a hit. Who knows? And on National Coming Out Day in 1991, Dick Sargent publicly declared his homosexuality in support of gay rights issues. And he continued to act long after his years on Bewitched. He did a lot of work with Sally Struthers and the Christian Children's Fund. You know, those commercials where Sally Struthers is the first ones where give somebody some money so they can eat, and these depressing pictures of children all over the world. So Agnes Moorehead, she signed on to play Andorra, which was Samantha's mother, under the agreement that she could work one day a week. So she would sometimes shoot all of her scenes in that one day in order to go home to her family. And her character was intended to appear just sporadically. But after she became accustomed to living a certain lifestyle, she had bigger bills and needed bigger income. And so she signed on for more episodes. Would that be diva behavior? I don't know. I mean, you know, just... I think she never expected the show to succeed. And then later felt trapped by its success. She didn't want to be associated with being a witch. I mean, some of her best early work was back in Orson Welles' Mercury Theater on Air. That's the ones with the War of the Worlds kind of thing, back in the 1930s. And she was in his troupe and did perform on the War of the Worlds broadcast, which I talked about back on the Halloween episode. And despite Agnes being married to John Lee, her co-stars identified her as a lesbian. To this day, people will fight you over this. It doesn't really matter. I mean, she was such a terrific actress. And her own friend Paul Lynde, who was on the show and also made all the 70s game shows just a delight to watch, whether it's Match Game or Hollywood Squares. I mean, just Paul Lynde was just over the top. And he said, well, the whole world knows Agnes was a lesbian. I mean, classy as hell, but one of the all-time Hollywood dykes. That was his quote. That's not me paraphrasing. And when Agnes caught her husband cheating on her, she yelled, if you can have a mistress, so can I. And she later acknowledged her same-sex orientation and identified a number of other Hollywood actresses who enjoyed lesbian or bisexual relationships. But, you know, Agnes Moorehead's good friend Debbie Reynolds denied up and down that Agnes Moorehead liked women and blamed rumor-mongering and gossip. But Moorehead loved gossip. She loved it. You know, she herself admitted the industry was full of wanted and unwanted informants. And a journalist asked her if Rock Hudson was gay, and she nodded her head, indicating yes. And when the journalist asked her how she knew, she said, an informant. Now, Elizabeth Montgomery and those on the set of Bewitched, I mean, for being the mid-60s to early 70s, it was an extremely liberal cast. I mean, you had Dick Sargent, he was gay, everybody knew it, they didn't bother him about it, they didn't care. In 1992, he and Elizabeth Montgomery rode in the Pride Parade together and even served as Grand Marshals. And one of the questions in the Q&A was, you know, about Moorehead and her children. Now, Agnes and her husband had no biological children, so they became interested in adoption. And the original story was that her doctor told her about a little boy at an orphanage who needed the right family to come along and adopt him. And he needed expensive care and had been passed over repeatedly. And his name was Sean, and roughly about a year and a half old and supposedly born in California in 1947. And he had lived with two foster families before returning to an orphanage. And he had a twin sister that had already been adopted. So Agnes agreed to adopt the boy in 1949. And he suffered from anemia and gum disease and cross eyes and severe malnutrition and lung problems. And the story was that Sean's birth mother had put six of her 14 children up for adoption. And according to Debbie Reynolds, another Hollywood celebrity adopted the twin sister. So you had Agnes, who was raising Sean, and when she divorced her husband in 1952, it was exposed that she never legally adopted Sean. She was acting more as a foster mother and a legal guardian to him until he reached age 18. And she claimed in a later interview that she was single and single women weren't eligible to adopt children. It's the strangest thing, because when she first adopted Sean, you know, into her life, she was very married to John Lee. So it makes you wonder what was really going on in this situation and who his biological parents were. And even after she divorced John Lee, she married Robert Gist just 2 years later in 1954. So again, she was married and could have adopted Sean unless there was something else unspoken going on. Now, two different newspapers had printed stories in 1952 stating that she had received the final adoption papers for her son. One thing that happened was this constant change in his age. And if she adopted him, how did she unadopt him? It even, one of the articles said that the baby is now completely hers. And, you know, she was often on the road, acting in plays or supporting her film career, which left Sean home alone, or at least without Moorhead, and was supervised by, you know, whoever she hired to sit up with him. And Sean spent summers at Moorhead's farm in the Muskegon Valley in southeast Ohio, where he wrote her letters begging her to come home and love him, telling her how much he missed her and how he'd been a very good boy. And when Moorhead was with Sean, she acted as a, you know, a strict disciplinarian, which only drove Sean away from her. Agnes was the daughter of a minister, highly religious, and she believed she became successful due to an upbringing of stern discipline and manners. In an interview with Tony Thomas, Agnes Moorhead explained that the most crucial facet of her professional life was discipline, which she said began at a very early age. She had watched as her younger sister mimicked their father as he met with parishioners, something Moorhead saw as disrespectful. And that younger sister went on to take her own life. So she may have come across overbearing while attempting to steer the youngster into structure. And of course, that can sometimes make kids more rebellious. So Sean became more and more troubled, and he expressed abandonment issues. And he went through this phase of believing that no one liked him while demanding that people call him Eric. And Debbie Reynolds and her kids tried to be there for him. She described Sean as nice and well-mannered, but it seems like he was more troubled, you know, than she ever let on. Since she knew both Sean and the twin sister, or at least where the sister was, I do wonder if she ever told either of them. Did they ever connect? And that's kind of a mystery. Sometime between 1965 and 1967, Sean broke into Agnes's home safe and stole money from her, which resulted in her sending him to boarding schools in Wales and Switzerland. You know, and when he came home, he'd grown his hair long, and, you know, Agnes was no fan of hippies at all and demanded that he cut it. And he refused and ran away. And he was gone around 3 weeks before resurfacing in Agnes's living room. And she again demanded that he clean up and cut his hair, and he finally gave in. So then she enrolled him in this French private school in Los Angeles, where again he gravitated toward hippies and the counterculture types. And before long, he was dabbling in drugs and alcohol. And these are all things that, of course, enraged Agnes, who envisioned the adoption as her raising and obtaining a studious and obedient son. So the following year, Sean wanted to enlist in the U.S. Army and fight in Vietnam. And Agnes said no. You know, she put her foot down. And after Debbie Reynolds learned that he planned to run away yet again, she stepped in to explain to him that, you know, war was no joke. She said, you know, you should learn about what you're getting into. And Sean agreed to visit a VA hospital with her to talk to soldiers about the war. And after meeting soldiers who were missing limbs, he never mentioned joining the Army again. He was still interested in guns, though. And after Agnes found a dismantled gun in his bedroom drawer, she told him to get out of her home, which he did. She also received word there was an outstanding warrant for his arrest for failure to appear in traffic court. Apparently, he had been driving with no license. So Sean then left the country, fled to Switzerland with Mark Russell. After the two stayed with Paulette Goddard for a while, Russell returned to the U.S., but no one knew what became of Sean after he left Goddard's home. Agnes apparently heard from him a few times, you know, him supposedly reaching out and asking for money, but we don't know if she gave him any. You know, when people asked her where Sean was, she would smile and say, "That's all right. That's the way boys are." And he never surfaced again. None of his schoolmates ever heard from him again, not from high school or college. So you had Agnes carrying on with her successful acting career. And when she was dying of uterine cancer, Sean never reached out to her. She left him nothing in her will, and the document specifically states that she has no children, natural or adopted, living or deceased. So it's kind of a, you know, shady adoption agreement. She could have just, you know, said, I don't want any of my money to go to my kids, you know, just that kind of way, rather than just saying, I don't have any kids. Maybe she minimized her relationship with him because he grew up and rejected her. You know, is Sean dead or alive? Lots of people are interested, but it doesn't appear that anyone knows. And if they do, they're keeping it to themselves. And, you know, was his name Sean Moorhead? Sean Lee Moorhead? If the couple didn't legally adopt him, why would he have taken their name? Now, he'd be in his 70s today, and he was always described in the newspapers as having fiery red hair like Agnes, even though photos of him as a teenager show him with very dark hair. A woman who went to school with him in Wales said his hair was very dark and wiry, and he had invited her to holiday with him in Beverly Hills, but she declined. Now, there is a rumor that Sean's twin sister is Catherine Kathy Perry Cohn, who was adopted by Columbia Pictures Corporation mogul Harry Cohn and his actress wife Joan Perry Cohn. Yeah, I don't know if that's true or not. That's just kind of the majority buzz about it. And Kathy supposedly lives in Montana, somewhat estranged from her family. And when the Cohns first married, Joan got pregnant and gave birth to a daughter named Jobella, who died about 30 minutes after birth. And then in 1947, she adopted a baby girl who they named Catherine, or Kathy for short. And when Harry Cohn died, his probate split assets between his two biological sons and Catherine. And the terms were if she chose not to consider herself part of the Cohn family, her trust would be discontinued. You know, so I wonder if she showed early signs of splitting and searching for her birth parents. And, you know, Harry Cohn, he was the guy who used to hit on Joan Crawford all the time. And she would tell him to stop it because she was having dinner and hanging out with his wife and kids. And the thing with her is that she, too, adopted twin girls in 1947 from this very shady baby broker, which I have talked about on this podcast before, called the Tennessee Children's Home Society in Memphis. I mean, this place was horrible. You know, that place was the mecca for people looking to adopt in the 1920s through 1940s. And the agency was closed by the state after the director of it was accused of running a baby-selling operation that sent children to all corners of the country. And many of the children went to big names in the movie industry or New York City elite with little questions asked. And the scandal, you know, there was a lot of shady paperwork. And this might explain why Joan Crawford was always nervous when people asked about her twins. Sometimes she would tell people they weren't twins at all because her biggest fear was the birth parents showing up to reclaim their kids. After Joan Crawford passed away, her twins searched for their birth parents and discovered their mother had signed them away to the orphanage and then died 7 days after childbirth. And their father, J.W. Jordan, was still alive at the time, and they were able to connect with him before he passed away. He said he had asked the hospital where the girls went, and they said, away. He had no way of tracing them. It took the twins filing court orders to get the records unsealed in order to search for their biological parents. One of the twins moved back to Tennessee and took up with her biological, you know, kin. And Crawford and the Cohns were very close friends, and both named an adoptive child, Kathy. And when Harry Cohn passed away, Joan Perry Cohn married Harry Carl, who was Debbie Reynolds' ex-husband. See, this kind of circle they had going. And it's interesting that this circle all adopted kids in 1947. And one last thing interesting about Moorhead is the cancer that she succumbed to as part of a tragic legacy thought to be left behind by the filming of The Conqueror that was filmed in St. George, Utah. And that set was downwind of the U.S. government's Nevada National Security Site that received the brunt of nuclear fallout from testing. It was part of Operation Upshot Knothole. And Howard Hughes didn't know any better, and once filming moved from Utah back to Hollywood, he shipped 60 tons of dirt from the contaminated site to Hollywood in order to ensure the dirt matched in every single scene. At the time, the federal government claimed the dirt and area posed no hazard to the public. But knowing what we know now, it was highly toxic. out of 220 production members, 91 developed some form of cancer. And this included Susan Hayworth, John Wayne, and Pedro Armendariz, who took his own life after learning he had kidney cancer. Many extras developed cancer, and director Dick Powell also succumbed to the disease. You know, even, you know, just people that visited the set had tumors removed and things. And Howard Hughes blamed himself and felt guilty for the rest of his life. And people asked him how he couldn't know since he was, you know, a U.S. defense contractor. And he bought every print of the film for $12 million and kept it out of circulation until his death. And then Universal purchased it from his estate. In his last dying days, he locked himself in a room and watched The Conqueror over and over again. Now, going back to the show, Erin Murphy played the role of young Tabitha Stevens. And during the first season, she shared the role with her fraternal twin sister, Diane, as they were similar in appearance. And producers, back then and still today, were only auditioning twins to get around the child labor laws. And that is always what they do. Always, always, always. If you are a twin, or if you are listening to this and have kids who are twins, especially babies or toddlers, get yourself to Hollywood and they will get some work. Because, you know, child labor laws and restricted the amount of time a child actor could be on set. Because they were fraternal, as the twins got older and looked less alike, only Erin played the up-close main role, while her sister was used for long shots and cutaways. And in recent interviews, Erin talked about how her sister would cry on set, and even now it's not her thing. But Erin, on the other hand, you know, relished being in the spotlight and wanted more. And she called Elizabeth Montgomery Mantha Mommy because she couldn't pronounce Samantha. And the twins loved Agnes Moorehead and thought of her as a grandmother. But their parents weren't so happy with Agnes at first. She was always trying to get the twins to pray with her on set, something that was perhaps overbearing. And after Bewitched, Erin Murphy went on to get bit roles on Lassie, and she landed some commercials. And before she decided to settle down, she worked as a stunt and photo double for Virginia Madsen and Melissa Leo. And she's been married a few times, I think at least three, and has six boys. And she's resurfaced here and there as a celebrity judge or a stylist or a hair and makeup artist. And she's been on infomercials. And a fan ran into her at a convention in 2010 and filmed themselves asking her if she ever used adult movies for foreplay. In which she said yes, pretty excitingly. Lately, she's enjoying time away from the spotlight. She works on her knitwear company, Erin Murphy Knits, and focuses on helping her kids and grandkids homeschool during the pandemic. She also has a line of frozen vodka martini ice pops that she pushes. And after being talked into acting in her local theater, she got the bug again. So you know what? We might see her in more theater shows or back on our screens in the future. And Samantha and Darren's young son, Adam Stevens, was mainly played by David Mandel Block, who shared the cutaway roles with his twin brother, Greg Mandel. And, you know, again, it was because of child labor laws. He was actually credited in the show as David Lawrence, something that throws people off because, you know, if you search that name, you get Block. And the boys landed their part after an agent linked to the show called local pediatricians asking if they knew of any six-month-old twins. See how easy it is? One doctor had just the twins in mind, the Blocks. He told the agent he would call their adoptive mother to ask if she was interested. Apparently lots of adoptive parents ending up with twins on the set of Bewitched. And after the mother agreed, cast and crew met the kids and decided they were the ones. So these twins grew up fighting over whose turn it was on set. They liked it that much. And they later said their favorite episode was Adam, Warlock, or Washout, because they were wired to fly and film their own stunts. I mean, there was a lot of flying, and there was a lot of harnesses, and there was a lot of jumping from small ledges. And, you know, the twins went on to star in commercials and some bit acting roles, and, you know, they retired from showbiz fairly early in their career to enjoy a normal childhood. And when they were 14, they expressed interest in searching for their biological parents, and they discovered they were adopted immediately after birth. And get this. Their parents were actor Tony Curtis and beauty queen Peggy Potter, and they went on the Vicki Lawrence talk show in the early 1990s to reveal their findings. Now, to my knowledge, the biological parents never acknowledged them, and one twin changed his last name to Block, while the other changed his to Mandel. And, you know, so, I mean, they're half-siblings of Jamie Lee Curtis. So, I mean, that's kind of interesting. And this is how fans get confused, though, as to what happened to David Lawrence, because, you know, that's why. And the twins invented separate identities to forge separate careers. And they will surface, you know, from time to time at Bewitched conventions, so they are around. The role of Larry Tate was played by David White. Larry Tate was Darren's advertising executive boss, and he got his start in Broadway and was popular long before Bewitched. He became a show favorite and developed a classic cult following. A rock band even took on the name The Larry Tate Experience. His wife, Mary Welch, was also a popular actress, and his on-screen son was named after his real-life son, Jonathan. And he directed one episode and appeared in 191 out of the 254 episodes. You know, he got a kick out of being an honest man playing kind of this two-faced role. And the only real feud he had on set was with producer Bill Asher. He argued that his name should appear in the opening credits because he appeared often. And finally, in the last season, Asher gave in to the demand. After Bewitched, he continued to be a sought-after character actor who earned roles on, you know, Love Boat, where everybody went, and Columbo and the Rockford Files, Cagney and Lacey, Dallas, and a lot of others. And he even worked with many of his fellow Bewitched co-stars in another series. Sadly, his first wife, Mary, died during her second childbirth, leaving the actor and son, Jonathan, behind. And on December 22nd, 1988, his son, Jonathan, was killed over Lockerbie, Scotland, in the bombing of Pan Am Flight 103. Actress Marion Lauren played Samantha's old and funny aunt, Clara. And her character collected doorknobs, and in real life, so did Lauren. She had quite the extensive collection that she hauled around and showed off. And many were used as props in the series. Bewitched was her last role. She passed away from a heart attack right before season 5 began filming. And the series opted not to replace her, and they never mentioned her character again. Instead, they brought in the character Esmeralda, played by Alice Ghostly, for comedic relief. And Ghostly and Lauren had acted side by side in the film The Graduate. And the classic theme song that everybody came to love originally had lyrics, but the creators opted for a purely instrumental track. It would have been sung by Steve Lawrence. And it was Bewitched, Bewitched, You've Got Me in Your Spell, You Know Your Craft So Well. And even today, you know, the series resonates with viewers. You know, it serves as this kind of timeless escape from the dark woes of society, you know. So you see, you never know what you're going to get from a Zoom Q&A question, especially if it's something that has always kind of stuck in the back of my mind and I wanted to dig more and find out the inside scoop. So anyway, I hope you guys have a great rest of your Saturday night.